I wanted to start by talking to you a little bit about one of the themes that recurs, which is to do with haunting or being haunted. Why is that such a kind of key idea for you?
I am really interested in ghosts and haunting, and not because I have any literal belief in ghosts or haunting, but I think that ghosts are fascinating to me because they get at an issue of time. And I'm really obsessed with time. And what I think of as what can sometimes be a blurred boundary between the past and the present. Like I sort of think of there being almost a semi-permeable membrane between the past and the present, and that sometimes bits of the past can seep through. And like a ghost is a literal manifestation of that in stories, but I think that has some psychological equivalence. Also, I think a lot about I think it was André Breton in his novel Nadia, who he quotes, I think what I think is actually an old French proverb, "Tell me who you haunt, and I'll tell you who you are." And I think a lot about that because he goes on to say something about how the word haunt leads him to see relations between himself and others in a stranger way. And that he ends that passage by saying something like, "Who have I ceased to be in order to become who I am?" And for me, that question, who have I ceased to be in order to become who I am, is I think that might be actually like a question that kind of animates the pamphlet. So ghosts are a way of a pastime manifesting itself, and they're just really fun.
That makes a lot of sense, yeah, in the context of the pamphlet, because one of the things you do, obviously, in terms of the structure is the beginning is very much about first poems about family and the past. And yeah, it ends with a 15-year-old self, or kind of speaking back to a 15-year-old self. So that's very interesting, just thinking about kind of how a person changes through time and how an earlier version of yourself still exists, I suppose, in some way.
Yeah, and I think in that last poem, almost you might ask, who is doing the haunting, the 15-year-old self or the older speaker of the poem?
That's great. That's a really interesting way of putting it, and that'll make it very interesting. We're not going to talk about that poem, but that'll be cool to now revisit it, I suppose, given what you say there
Yeah.
about how you maybe could conceptualize it. Could you possibly read, just because we're thinking about haunting, could you possibly read the second poem in the pamphlet, which is called "Haint"?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. Haint. Last night I heard the dogs again, this side of the crick. This morning, another window smudged, and her bitty footprints in the skift. Ma wipes her eyes in the glass, takes the broom out to snow sweep. Pa's painting the fence blue like a river she can't cross. Tonight, he'll throw salt on the coals. They'll tuck me in while the sun's stumbling down through the hollers, tripping on all those new stones. But I've been a burly when it's airish, with no light yet over the balds, and crept into the front room and seen her playing by the stove, her mite fingers dandling the red embers. I know she sees me with her black eyes and her brickle hair and her gap mouth and her pocky skin. I say, baby sis, Jasper girl, where have you been?
So this is really interesting to think about in terms of what you were just saying there, in terms of who's being haunted, because I guess there are certainly sort of three definite characters in this poem, and then also another kind of, as you said before, maybe sort of between life and death, it would appear. How do you think about the haunting in this poem? Who is being haunted, or what is the haunting for?
To be honest, I don't know. What got me going with this poem was actually the language of sort of the southeastern United States, and particularly, the mountains of southern Appalachia. And I was playing with that language, which is part of my ancestry, and a voice began to emerge, and the voice was this speaker, this child, and sort of it unfolded from there. So and that this speaker has this knowledge that they're not sharing with the ma and the pa, who are also sensing the haunting presence of a lost, essentially, a baby sister, as it says in the second to last line.
That's one of the most interesting things, actually, about the poem, I suppose, is that kind of sense of what the speaker knows or seems to, what kind of connection they seem to have with the baby sis, and that the adults maybe don't have. I mean, I'm particularly thinking of that. I think it's the fifth stanza, which begins but. It's like it's sort of things sort of slightly shift in the sense that maybe, the mother and the father are resistant to this idea of the haunting, or that, or maybe they're very unnerved by it, and yet the speaker seems to kind of embrace it.
Yeah, I think, well, two things. One, children always know more than we give them credit for. And that is important to me about the speaker. And I think maybe across the pamphlet, actually, as well, the idea of what the less powerful person might actually hold as knowledge is important to me. And I think that final question, baby sis, Jasper girl, where have you been? This speaker, greets the haunting presence of a deceased sibling, who in some ways is kind of like a terrifying mirror image of herself. It's a self, but a self with black eyes and brickle hair and gap mouth and pocky skin. And greets that presence instead of with sort of terror and horror, with warmth and curiosity. And I think that's this pamphlet as well, is the idea of greeting or meeting or re-encountering parts of the past and presences that the expected reaction might be terror, horror, or something else, but trying to find another way of approaching them.
That's maybe something we'll get to when we think about some of your other poems as well, actually. But the point you were making earlier about the language and how the speaker seems to emerge out of the language, do you feel then that this kind of haunting that's happening here is very local? Is it very grounded in a particular place as well as the language?
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about the language of the particular place, right? Of this region, and I grew up outside Boston, so I grew up in the northeastern United States, but my parents' families are located in the South, and particularly one side of the family is from Eastern Tennessee, foothills of the Great Smoky Mountains. So I was the northern child of southern parents, and we would go back, and I am familiar with most of this language firsthand, even if it's not language that I myself would use. I would either see it on signs, hear it around me, in the South, or also my parents loved folk music, and the folk music of Appalachia uses this language, and a lot of the words in it actually are specific. They're like landscape words, like balds, the treeless mountaintop. So I am thinking of the poem as having a very particular locale.
Yeah, I think that's one of the reasons it makes it so compelling, this poem, actually. I wanted to, just because you were talking there about language, I want to turn a little bit towards, I guess, speaking and saying things that maybe are possible in poetry that you can't say otherwise. In the endorsement that Caroline Bird wrote for you, she writes about how the poems say without saying, and Blame Without Naming, which is really fascinating way of thinking about some of these poems. And so, given that poetry is often this form which is very focused on words and language, as I guess we've been saying, how do you think about that tension between, I guess, on the one hand, not speaking and also using words to express ideas? How do those two things work together?
I'm glad that you brought up Caroline's endorsement, and she's talking about that saying, saying without saying, and that being sort of a paradox in the work. And there's an earlier sentence in the endorsement in which she says, the girls of our past see us, the grown-up girls, talking and wonder how and if we ever found the words. And I was really taken by that sentence when I read it, because I think that the pamphlet is concerned with finding the words and knowing that the words are always inadequate. And I always tell my students in my poetry seminar that poems hover over the unsayable, right? So, what tools do you use to try to get as close as you can to the unsayable? And and when the unsayable is emotionally difficult, that's a whole other layer. And I think something that is maybe like a strategy that I employ is to access the power of imagination. And so I have not attempted to write directly into there's no true accounts of anything in here. These are all poems of imagination. And the poet Terence Hayes, I've heard him talk on podcasts, and I think maybe even in an appearance he did at the South Bank. He talked about how the poet serves two masters, memory and imagination. And he says, I always to lean towards imagination because he says, memory can be a real motherfucker. sorry for the language, but I think it's true. I think that imagination and is where I find the language.
I don't know whether there's a way in which some of the memory or some of the challenges of memory or some of the challenges of some of the ideas you're trying to express are maybe better expressed in narrative form as well, because you have quite a few poems in here which are narrative driven. I'm thinking particularly of, I mean, the first poem, All My Dead Relatives Picnic on the Banks of the Tennessee, or there's that poem, fantastic poem, Reunion, later in the pamphlet as well. So do you think, kind of, I suppose, storytelling through poetry, does that help to kind of explore or expand on some of these very difficult subjects that you're dealing with?
It's funny that you bring that up, because I think for a long time I felt that in some ways I was like not a real poet or less of a poet if a poem was strongly narrative. And I think I probably still grapple with that wondering sometimes. I don't in sit down and intend that my poems are going to do that. But I am very, I love place, as we see in Haint, and I love voice and I love character. And those elements allow me to play and to reinvent. I have, like, as I said, I have zero interest in sort of like memoir or writing a true account of anything, because we all know that memory is so fallible and it's partly a confabulation anyway. I don't really know what more to say about that, except that it's clearly deep within me. And actually, the poem Haint, when I think about it, has aspects of some of the music that traditional music of Appalachia that I have heard and that has sort of been part of my upbringing, and the tradition of the Appalachian murder ballad. And of course, there are murder ballads here too, right? And those often involve speech, like a lot of this poem ends with someone speaking, right? It often can involve violence. It sometimes can involve, well, yeah, they're murder ballads, but it can involve hauntings. So I guess maybe that's just also sort of like in my DNA.
Yeah, I think one of the really powerful things about those poems is that it sort of does all those things, doesn't it? It has sometimes it has this strong narrative pulse, sometimes, and it's often it has these very strong characters, or often bound up in this very direct language. And I guess that certainly happens in some of the other poems I was going to ask you about, which are those which are dominated, I suppose, by female characters. There's this kind of sense, I think, of a kind of female solidarity across quite a few of them. I'm thinking of pieces like Mud Season, Reunion Poem I mentioned, Speaking of Shakespeare's Juliet, and the last poem to my 15-year-old self. Why was that such an important thread to have running through the pamphlet, that sort of female connection?
Well, it's interesting the words, female connection and female solidarity, because when I think about a lot of those poems, they're oftentimes they involve missed connections, or a connection that one party might want to restore, and yet it can't be restored, because it's, I mean, a poem like Reunion is speaking into the past, and so there's this unbridgeable barrier, right? And also there are emotional barriers between those characters. And in a poem like Mud Season, yes, there are characters who are taking action together. But I wonder, is it really about solidarity or is it about resistance? And there are many women in this pamphlet. And I questioned myself a lot about whether I should be include more male presences. And ultimately, I thought, no, because so many of these situations and so many of these poems are haunted by the specter of patriarchal violence and women being told very narrow stories about themselves. So I just wanted to let these women be and be together as best they could.
And so this other question I have, which kind of relates to what you were just saying there, I think it maybe speaks back to something you were talking about earlier in terms of how certain stories kind of turn out and how far, I suppose this is part of haunting as well. It's kind of maybe a reminder of a way that things were, but maybe could have turned out differently. Because there's quite a few poems. I mean, obviously, speaking of Shakespeare's Juliet is also called, is actually called Speaking of Shakespeare's Juliet and the Women of My Family. And then maybe the reunion poem as well. There's a lot of situations, I suppose, where it's about rewriting or reimagining situations. So they kind of could possibly turn out differently to the way they actually did, maybe in reality. So how are you thinking about, is that something that the poem can do? Is it a way of, it's not a corrective exactly, but is it a way of showing there are alternative situation or alternative possibilities for certain maybe tragic or difficult situations.
I would say that, as I said before, there's very little fact here. And so I guess the reader gets to decide to what extent there was a what happened and then a, what didn't happen. So I leave that totally open to the reader. But I also think that, for example, in the I wrestled a lot with that very short poem, Speaking of Shakespeare's Juliet and the Women of My Family. And actually, the title came at the end or very near the end after I had been around the houses and I tried drafting it so many ways. And it came out of a desire to write the narrative of Juliet backwards. And because I'm an English teacher, I've taught that play, more times than I can count. And Someone finally said to me, I think looking at a draft of this poem, it's about undoing the damage. I was like, yeah, it is. And damage that has been done in history can't be undone. But again, it's the power of the imagination, and it's exciting. It's exciting and feels powerful as a poet and as a writer to use your skills of language and imagination to construct an alternate reality.
Yes, and I guess that's one of the things that the pamphlet does very clearly, isn't it? It's kind of it talks a little bit about it talks about the possibilities of language and the possibilities of change, and whether that is in relation to patriarchal violence or whether it is in relation to just how we think about certain real or in this case fictional characters, and how we can use imagination in order to not think those necessarily those characters are fixed in time and place, but actually they can speak to us directly as well. It really works beautifully, that poem. I think that's towards the end, isn't it? I did want to ask you a question about kind of the structure of the pamphlet and how you decided to kind of organize it. I mean, you went through quite a few drafts of the pamphlet, but were there moments where you thought, okay, these poems have definitely got to go together, they speak to each other very directly? Was the first poem always the first poem? Was the last one always the last poem?
There's a broad sweep, I guess, if you look just at the bookend poems of, first of all, a sort of in the present tense, but looking at an event that would be very far away in time, right? All my dead relatives. So those are all people from the past, characters from a distant past. And then and in a very, specific location. And then by the end of the pamphlet, we're in a location to which the speaker is directly connected. Speaking to a previous iteration of themselves. And so it feels much closer to the present moment. It's more retrospective. There's an I present. And so that sort of like sweep is important to me over the course of the pamphlet. And of course, in those two bookending poems, you've got the image of this violent image of a knife. And then in the final poem, the last word is cut in a very different sense, a very different context. And also that first poem ends with the loss of the capacity for speech. And that last poem ends, the last word of the pamphlet is spoken and, willful and determined. So I think other parts of the structure. Yeah, there are certain poems that I wanted to have go together, or Claire was very helpful to me in sort of creating tonal variation across the pamphlet so that we don't ever sort of get into a rut with one scenario or one mood.
That gives a really good sense, actually, of what you were thinking. Thank you. That's so interesting. I mean, I think that very much speaks to that the way in which the pamphlet is really beautifully crafted, whether it's the circularity that you're sort of describing there from beginning to end, but also just the way in which there is, I think, a lot of those kind of strands that we've kind of just been talking about, actually, whether it's to do with the kind of female relations or kind of female identity, or whether it's to do with that kind of violence, which run really clearly through the pamphlet, and people can trace that if they like. And there's definitely a real sense. One of the things we find joyful about the pamphlets is the way in which you can, even though it's a relatively short space of time which you're engaging with these poems, you're sitting with these poems, if you're a reader, it really speaks to a much kind of bigger context. And I think this pamphlet does that brilliantly well. So thank you so much for talking to me about it, Aoife, and congratulations.
Oh, thank you so much, Neil. It's a pleasure.